We crossed out of 51 territory in 10 minutes, and I had a mounting sense of unease. Precognition not specific enough to really mean anything. Still, it didn't take long in this line of work to learn to trust your instincts. I kept my guard up.
Shit!
A lucky shot took out a tire. The entire contraption, tons of metal, was jigging and jiving like a hellbreed jacked full of silver. I struggled against the sudden drag on the steering wheel. I steered into the skid, mashing the accelerator to the floor to get us out of the fire zone if possible. We hit a curb. The car lifted, physics taking her revenge in a big way. Down was up, and up was down. I was picked up, shaken, tossed a few different ways at once, and thrown into that blank spot between normal life and disaster for an endless moment of disorienting darkness. The edged reek of spilled gasoline burst in my sensitive nose. I blinked something wet and warm out of my eyes.
At least I'm right side up. Or am I?
It took me a second to figure out which way gravity was dragging, the blood in my eyes streaking in fat globules down my cheeks.
Oh, must be a head wound. They're messy. Bleed a lot. It's gas I smell.
Move, Jill! Get the fuck out of here!
Theron?
Theron!
The wear was gone. I tore myself free of the seatbelt and squirmed around the gear shift, its head ripped free of the shaft. The red, fuzzy dice Galena had given me had disappeared, and the car had rolled, coming to rest right side up.
God damn, I'm still alive. Again. Go figure.
I braced my shoulders against the seat and kicked. The jolt slammed my shoulders deeper into glass-strewn upholstery.
No dice. The entire car's crumpled. I can't bust the door open.
The passenger side window had been rolled down and was now an irregular hole. Stink of flammable fluid rose, gagging thick.
Get out of here, Jill. All it takes is a spark.
I wormed my way toward the window.
Shit!
Almost got me that time.
The choice was to stay where I was and possibly roast if the car went up, or get shot as I wriggled out the window. I froze, half a precious second trickling away through molasses as the body, idiot meat that it is, expressed in the strongest possible terms that it didn't want to get shot again.
Move!
My arms shot out, fingers closing around the edges of the hole, jagged metal slicing deep. I didn't care. I hauled myself free. Black smoke belched and the unholy reek of vinyl burning scoured hot water from my eyes. My coat got stuck and I fell to the concrete. I fetched my head a stunning blow, but rallied fast, almost throwing myself to my feet. The shockwave flung me flat, leather scraping the pitted surface of the road and my head snapping back, bouncing as I hit again. I picked myself up. My ears were bleeding, thin trickles of evaporating coolness down my neck.
God damn it! My car!
My baby. My beautiful Impala I'd bought from a junkyard and nursed to apple pie order was through. They were still shooting at me, but the bulk of the burning car shielded me from view. It was a small mercy. As soon as the smoke thinned a little, they would have a clear field of fire.
Cover. Find cover.
I headed for the far side of the street, my back wrenching in a quick burst of red pain. There were acres of cracked, sunstruck pavement and no cover. Suddenly, Theron landed gracefully in front of me, his fingers tented on the concrete as the bullets flew by. He grabbed me, shifting his weight. The scar woke, prickling and roiling as I pulled blindly on etheric force. I pushed with the long muscles in my legs, uncoiling in a leap as awkward as it was effective. The alley opened up like a gift. It swallowed us whole. shadows sharp in the flood of sunshine.
My fucking car!
Worry about it later, goddammit. They're still shooting!
Black smoke began to spill in past the mouth of the alley.
My baby! Gone in a heartbeat!
Jesus Christ, Joe, get with the program!
They blow up my car!
Woman, you're lucky they didn't fill you full of lead again. This is getting ridiculous.
They blew up my car! God damn it, you fucking weird! Do something useful!
What the hell am I supposed to do? Jesus Christ, who wants you dead this bad, Jill?
How the hell should I know? It's someone different every fucking week.
Shadows moved at the mouth of the alley. Theron pulled me behind a dumpster and shoved me down. We both crouched there, the hot explosive reek of garbage climbing down my throat.
Where are we?
Shh!
Theron waved a hand and cocked his head, a cat's inquiring movement. His eyes glowed orange, swords of sunlight piercing the high blank wall of a ratty old tenement across the alley. A fire escape jagged up on our side further back, but it looked rickety and rusted. Both of us were probably too heavy for it. It's the price you pay for heavier muscle and bone. Less vulnerability, but more mass in the ass.
Still, if they come through, we'll either have to kill or flee. There's no third option. We can't vanish here. And it's in the middle of the goddamn day.
See them?
Nada, if they... they're gone.
I smelled them from the mouth of the alley. Sweat, cordite, beer, and grease. Along with the deep brunette scent of dark-haired men. Theron's hand tightened on my shoulder, and mine tightened around a gun butt.
You better tell El Pendejo Gordo. He said you had to see the body.
I know that. Come on.
My skin chilled.
Think, Jill. Think.
Someone asking for kill verification was someone serious about murdering me. And El Pendejo has two meanings. One is fool or stupid idiot. A looser translation is son of a bitch.
Not very PC, because the other meaning in Santa Luz is cop.
The blue Chevy Caprice smelled of sourness. It was clean enough, despite the bottle of bourbon shoved under the passenger seat and the funk of burned and mashed cigars. It was hot, but the heat was bleeding away as the sun retreated and shade fell over the parking lot.
He parks out here because it's the only time he gets alone.
The insight was unwelcome. I lay in the back seat, still and quiet as a stone. Of course, I was pretty much in plain sight, except for the thin thread of sorcery running through my aura. Complete invisibility is expensive, energetically speaking. It's much easier, and cheaper, to simply avert the gaze. To hook onto that quality of the repeatable in the physical world that lulls most people into sleepwalking. It makes them good prey, even cops, who notice more than most. Dappled shade from a tall, anemic pine tree clinging to life at the edge of the lot fell over the car. Yet another reason for him to park here. I waited.
Take it easy, Jimmy.
Monty dropped into the seat, pushing his battered briefcase carefully over into the passenger side. He reached over for the bottle tucked under the folded newspaper in the passenger side footwell. I clapped a hand over Montaigne's mouth and poked the gun into his ribs.
Drive! Take your usual route home.
I was sorry about the gun.
But I have to make sure. Completely sure.
His eyes got really, really wide. But he didn't question me. Just twisted the key to grind the starter. He pulled forward through an empty spot, taking a right and sliding through pools of orange as the lamps in the lot tried ineffectually to light the gathering dusk. Once I was sure he wasn't going to yell, I eased my hand away from his stubble.
Keep quiet.
Sweat dewed the back of Monty's neck. His tie was loosened and his jacket rumpled. I could smell the chalky undernote of Tums under his tang of heavy maleness, not at all clean and musky like a wares smell. We hit Balenciaga Avenue from the lot, and he began to move toward the residential section of town.
What is this, Joe?
Someone's been trying to kill me, Monty. Someone not on the night side. Someone who doesn't know you need special bullets and a lot of luck to take me down.
a real execution-style hit uptown. And then just today, a whole bunch of gangbangers took exception to me and started talking about cops wanting kill verification on my sweet little behind. You want to tell me why you wanted me to look into Marv's death so much?
Jesus. Put that thing away, Joe.
I wish I could, Monty. Not a chance. Not yet. Bourbon in the car, Montaigne? What the hell is going on with you?
It's the stress of putting up with you, goddammit. Your car was reported firebombed in the fucking barrio. They're whispering you're dead. Everyone's nervous.
Well, as far as the Santa Luz PD is concerned, I'm gonna stay dead. You're not gonna tell anyone you saw me. But before I go deep and silent to flush this one out, Monty, you're gonna level with me. You knew Kutchner was dirty.
It didn't feel right. I just suspected something. I didn't know what. God damn it, he was my partner.
You must have done a lot more than suspected, Montaigne. What, do you think I'm stupid? His widow's dead, and so is Winchell, and so is Pedro Ayala. How many other cops are dead, Monty? Was I supposed to end up one of them?
Ayala? What the fuck?
Ayala, over in Vice. Got himself taken down a bit ago. Shot on gang territory. But it wasn't a gang hit. It was because he uncovered something. I holstered the gun. Listen to me, Monty. You need to keep your head down and stay away from all this. I don't want you catching any flack. Who did you tell?
Tell?
That you called me in on the Kutchner case. Who did you tell? Anyone?
Not a fucking soul, Kismet. Jesus, you think I'm stupid? How big is this?
You've got some suspicions, don't you? You did from the start. God damn it, Monty, you should have told me.
I don't like to go into something like this with my ass hanging out. So, Marv was dirty? How dirty? Oh, shit!
Monty pounded the steering wheel with a fist.
Damn it! I didn't have a fucking clue, Jill. I would have told you for fuck's sweet fucking sake.
I know. But something here stinks. You can go ahead and smoke if you want to.
Gee, thanks.
Monty pulled a Swisher Sweet from his breast pocket and champed, lighting it while he steered with one hand. I glanced away from the flash of the lighter, a star in the darkness. Orange streetlight bounced off the road's hard paleness as he rolled his window down a little.
So, you think I should leave this alone?
No shit, Batman. Let me put it this way. I don't want to avenge you, too. I like you breathing.
That bad? How, dirty was he?
Don't worry about that, Monty. Worry about keeping out of this. Don't go anywhere alone. Be careful. And for God's sake, don't tell anyone I'm still alive.
That's going to be rough. What if someone else shows up missing on the east side?
That's more likely than you can possibly know. I wish we knew we'd gotten all the scurf. We were fast approaching a stop sign at Tewberry and 28th, and Monty put his foot on the brake. I coiled myself for action. Don't worry about me doing my job, Monty. You just keep yourself out of trouble. I was out the door before he could even curse at me. I watched his taillights vanish. I hope like hell he doesn't do anything silly. Theron was waiting in the darkened doorway of a bakery, doing the little wear camouflage trick. If my blue eye hadn't been able to look under the surface of the world, I would have had to depend on the thin thread of wrong touching my nerves and really look to see him. I also would have had a gun out while I did it. Theron's eyes fired orange in the gloom, like and unlike the street lamps.
Is he clean?
Squeaky. Or if he isn't, I haven't given him anything to go on other than I'm alive. And if word gets out I'm still breathing, I'll know where it came from. He suspected something was wrong, that's all. Intuition still happens. The wearer shrugged. My back prickled. Other wearers were still out running sweeps, but they hadn't found any trace of scurf. Yet. And I'd lost a full day. It's enough to turn anyone into a pessimist.
What next?
You stop by Galena's and pick up some ammo for me. Drop by the barrio and squeeze your gang friends for the word on why a cop would want me dead, and I'm gonna go home and change clothes.
Yeah, like I'm gonna let you out of my sight.
This isn't negotiable. I need a few minutes to myself and some hard thinking. Everyone thinks I'm dead, Theron. There aren't many cops who know the amount of damage I can really take, or what it would take to kill me. Nobody's gonna be looking for me just yet. Besides, the longer you wait to go talk to your friends in the barrio,
the more chance they'll forget something.
If you were Saul, we wouldn't be having this conversation. You'd be doing what I told you, goddammit.
I don't like it. I promised Saul I'd look out for you.
I'm just going home, Theron. I promise not to talk to strangers and to look both ways before crossing the street.
You'd better.
I strangled the urge to get the last word in as Theron eased out of the shadows. He took a few steps in the opposite direction, then gathered himself and blurred, running with fluid, finicky, feline grace. What I hadn't said hung in the air. Hunters depend on the police. They're our eyes and ears. What we do is law enforcement, in its strictest sense. And as Karp had pointed out, we didn't have some of the restrictions ordinary cops had. No hunter was ever hauled into court.
When you can't depend on your backup, where does that leave you? Fucked.
Until I knew more about who was trying to do me in, I couldn't even answer my pager. If someone else went missing, or a new case popped up...
You'd better finish this quickly, Jill. So start thinking about how you're gonna do that.
Word of advice. If you're looking to catch a hunter by surprise, don't do it in her house, for Christ's sake. Any place a hunter sleeps is likely to be well defended, and if it's easy to break in, you should be wondering how hard it's going to be to escape. A hunter does not sleep somewhere without knowing every crack and creak in the walls, which includes knowing when some sloppy-ass hellbreed has slithered through a window and is breathing heavily behind your door. So I was ready when I stepped through the door. I dropped down into a crouch as the dirty blonde breed flew over my head and smacked himself a good one on the jam. I drove upward with my knife, the silver laid along the blade sparking with blue spark flame. It met hell-tainted flesh. The breed twisted back towards me with that gut-loosening, spooky agility they all have. The hardest thing to get used to is how they move in ways human joints can't, and human muscles never would. I spun a full 180 and went down flat on my back in the entry hall.
Come to mama, you stupid fuck.
Unable to resist my feint, the bleeding breed didn't disappoint. He dropped down with claws outstretched, face twisting into a grinning mask of hate. Maybe he thought I was vulnerable since I was on the floor.
I spend half my fighting life on the floor.
Judo's not just fun, it's a lifesaver. Once you ground a breed, or say a possessor, their advantage in speed is gone, and their edge in strength is halved, if you know anything about leverage. But I had no intention of wriggling around with this jerkwad. He leapt forward. The shot from my 9mm punched through the shell of Hellbreed's skin. I followed up with a flick of a boot to catch his wounded belly, deflecting his leap by a few critical degrees so he sailed over me and onto the hardwood floor. I was on my feet again in a trice, dropping the knife to the floor and kicking it away so the breed couldn't reach it. My fingers closed around the bullwhip's handle. The braided leather snapped through the air, the tiny sharp bits of silvery metal tied on the end scoring Hellbreed flesh. The whip flickered again, like a snake's tongue weighted with razor blades. It tore across the breed's face, and by now, I'm sure both of us had figured out I wanted him taken alive. I wanted answers. I fell on top of him. The force broke his left arm in three places and got him down flush against the floor. I got the silver-loaded blade of another knife to his throat.
Do I have to cut your throat?
I didn't recognize this chalk-skinned scarecrow of a breed. He was definitely male. Cat's lit, blue eyes glowing, even in the wash of electric light.
Dumbass fucker left my lights on!
He was bleeding thin black eye core, a wash of the stinking stuff all over my dusty wooden floor. He wore a black silk button-down and designer jeans, but his battered, horn-calloused feet were bare, the toes too flexible to be human and graced with curling yellow nails. Suddenly the scar pulsed, sensing something akin to Hellbreed corruption.
Lord, no matter that, I don't kiss burned on my head.
I don't speak anything but human, asshole. You gonna stay settled down?
He writhed a little, testing, but subsided. I was braced and exerting leverage on the broken arm, grinding both shattered shoulders into the floor. He was losing a lot of ichor.
Don't you dare fucking die before I find out who sent you. Did Perry send you? Who sent you?
Bones cracked.
I've got all night to make you talk. And I enjoy my work, Hellspawn.
Shenan.
Oh, holy shit.
He heaved up, and my grasp slipped in a scrim of foul oil.
Ah, son of a bitch!
I set my teeth and my knees and yanked, twisting. His arm tore open. It sent out a jet of sour black arterial spray. My eyes burned from the noxious fumes as I struggled free of the rapidly rotting thing on the floor. A young, hungry blonde breed. Maybe thinking to prove something.
But Shen. Shenan.
There was only one thing that could mean.
Shenandoah.
Or, if you had your accent on right, Shenandoah. In other words, seriously fucking bad news. If Perry was the unquestioned leader of the Hellbreed in Santa Luz, keeping that position through murder and subterfuge, Shen was the queen, or an eminence grise. She was the biggest contender for replacing Perry if he ever got unlucky or soft. And that thought, friends and neighbors, was enough to break out any hunter in a cold sweat.
Gender means less than nothing when it comes to breed, but all in all, I'd rather deal with a male. Female Hellbreed just seemed deadlier.
The stink was amazing. It had been a day of varied and wonderful stenches, that was for goddamn sure. Thayrin was due to come back and find this mess lying around.
If there's anything I hate more than cooking, it's cleaning up Hellbreed mess from my own goddamn floor.
I towed the door closed, wishing I wasn't silhouetted in the rectangle of golden electric light. Fine tremors began in the center of my bones, the body coming down from a sudden adrenaline ramp-up and successive shocks. I shook so hard the tail of my coat swung, responding to my weight shifts. An internal earthquake. And me, without any seismic bracing.
Jill, you're not thinking straight. You could have handled him, gotten more information. You're beginning to blur under pressure. But who wouldn't? You have got to get some rest.
It was a great idea. Unfortunately, like all great ideas, this one had a fatal flaw. There was no rest to be had, not if one of the most powerful Hellbreed in the city, and one that had a reason to bear me a grudge, was sending Breed to kill me in my own house.
But why would she send a callow idiot like this? One who didn't know the first thing about hunters. One who hesitated before attacking me.
It didn't make any sense.
It never rains, but it pours.
I made it to the kitchen. The phone rang, sawing across my nerves. I lifted down the bottle of Jim Beam as carefully as if it was a Fabergé egg. The habit of drinking helps more than you'd think with something like this.
Kiss. God damn it, Kissman, answer your fucking phone! Pick up if you're there.
Sorry, honey. No can do.
Things are getting fucking ridiculous. Jesus. There's a lead. If you're there, if you get this message, there's this place downtown on 1st and Alhambra. It's a club. The Cat Club. I got a line on someone who knows something. She works there. A waitress named Irene. I'm going in.
Carp, goddammit! Oh, shit. Oh, fuck. Fuck it all, no!
First in Alhambra is a ritzy northern part of downtown. Despite spending most of my time in alleys and on rooftops, I also know where to find gentrification if I need it. Upscale eateries, boutiques, art galleries, and the smell of money. A fair amount of the Nightside has its fingers in high cash trades. The rich can pay for pleasures that might not be strictly earthly. I like to think it doesn't matter that I pursue every criminal equally. God knows I try to care a bit more for the poor, since they get shafted most often.
What's that old song? It's the rich what gets the pleasure, and the poor what gets the blame.
Truer words never spoken. No matter how hard I try to even the score, basic inequality looms over human life from cradle to grave.
Getting more pessimistic all the time, Jill. Why is that?
I crouched on the rooftop, watching the front of the Cat Club, a longtime fixture of downtown Santa Luz. Its current incarnation dates back to the Jazz Age. The normals think it's just a restaurant with a cabaret dinner show that turns into a nightclub at about midnight, shutting down just before dawn in merry defiance of the liquor laws. It's a venerable institution, housed in the bottom of the granite bulk of the Pier's Tower, one of the oldest skyscrapers in Santa Luz. Mikhail told me once that the property had been a mission long ago, before the town got big enough to attract Hellbreed. One thing is for sure, there is no sacredness left in those walls. The heat of the day had run out like the heat of the beam in my belly. I crouched and considered. If I went in my usual way, guns blazing, there would go my advantage in being thought dead. On the other hand, if Karp was in there, he needed all the help he could get.
Besides, a Hellbreed would know better than to think a burning car would do me in.
Why are you dilly-dallying, Jill? If Karp steps inside that place, you'll have to do more than bleed to get him out.
I weighed every possible alternative. Cold, hard logic said to just keep watch, see what happened, and return once I'd developed some other leads. With the benefit of whatever cops involved in this thinking I was dead, so I didn't have to worry about more bullets flying my way from that quarter, at least. It was the way I was trained to think. A straightforward totting up of averages and percentages. The greater good balanced against personal cost.
Screw that. Carper's in there.
You don't get to be a hunter without knowing when to buck the odds. I rose to my feet slowly.
Just like burning a Hellbreed hole, Jill. Go fast and deadly. You don't have Saul with you this time. You did it on your own before he showed up.
My fingers crept to the leather cuff over the scar. I undid the buckles and peeled it away. Cold air mouthed my skin with hundreds of vicious little wet lips. Every muscle tightened as the welter of sensation spilled through nerve endings already pulled taut with worry and stress.
It's gotten stronger, hasn't it? Oh, God.
The cold machine inside my head, jotting down percentages, replied that if it had, that was good. It would give me an edge I sorely needed.
I'll worry about the cost later.
Story of my life. I was mortgaging myself by inches. The most dangerous way to do it.
Well, I never did like doing things by halves. Go for the quick tear, Jill.
I pulled on etheric force, the scar thundering against my wrist. Too much power for me to really control. It wasn't obeying my will.
A piece of my own flesh, turning traitor.
My aura sparkled in the ether, a sea urchin of light. The rooftop quivered slightly, the world flexing around me. I leapt out into free air, physics bending, and the pavement smoking under a sudden application of strain. I hit the street like a ton of bricks, bleeding off some of the etheric force boiling through me and leaving behind a star-shaped pattern of cracks. I streaked through a gap in late-night traffic toward the door, a massive, iron-bound, oaken monstrosity, guarded by two bouncers, just this side of Gorilla, with flat, shining traitor eyes behind smoked sunglasses and the taint of hell swirling in their once-human auras.
A waitress named Irene. But first, we get Carper, and we make a statement.
The only question was whether or not to shoot the bouncers. I was already going too fast. I hit the door with megaton force, sharp spiked edges of my aura fluorescing into the visible as blue sparks crackled off every piece of silver jewelry I carried. I rode the door down like a surfboard. My knees bent when it hit the parquet inside. The restaurant was down a short hall behind swinging soundproofed doors. A skinny hat-check girl with the brackish aura of a traitor bared her teeth, cowering back into the plush darkness of her booth. Three bouncers converged on me. I shot two, pistol whipped the third, then plunged down the hall. I hit the swinging door so hard they both broke against the walls. I was suddenly in an oasis of silk palms, hanging fake greenery, and a fountain made of whipped glass and creamy spun metal. Glass eyes regarded me, shining in the soft light. There were at least 100 stuffed cats, maybe more, draped in the greenery, their fur brushed and glossy, and their fangs exposed. From little calico house cats to sleek stuffed panthers. I shivered to see 5 cougars arranged artistically on branches with bark too rough and shiny to be real. The place was stuffed with hellbreed and traitors. Linen-draped tables in nooks shrouded by false plants, clustered around a wide glassy dance floor, currently hosting a set of contortionists in spangled costumes. 3 unbreasted girls and 2 stick-thin boys, tall and stretched out, all with blank, dusted eyes and empty, loose mouths, writhing around each other. The maitre d' spun towards me, teeth bared.
Who the hell are you?
The maitre d' collapsed, half his head blown away, and the sudden, sharp stink of hell-breed death exploding with the oatmeal of his brain. I eyed them all. They watched me. The scar thundered and prickled, running with sharp diamond insect feet against my skin.
Must have forgotten my reservation!
I scanned the whole room once. Everything was frozen in place except the contortionists, twisted into pretzels.
I'm looking for a waitress named Irene. Now!
I spun towards the moan, catching a flash of a slumped body on a table, blood bright red and human decorating the linen, blue eyes wide open with terror and glazed with either death or unconsciousness.
Carp!
I landed on the table, heel slamming down bare inches from Carp's head on either side. I stood over him, gun in one hand, whip in the other. I spared a quick glance down. His eyes had half closed, and his mouth, wet, flickered, closing, opening again.
Ugh. He's alive. Thank God. Now to get him out of here.
Suddenly, the doors from the kitchen swung open, a wave of coldness pouring through the room. Every hellbreed and traitor in the place dropped to the ground like they'd all been caught with cyanide Kool-Aid. Dainty, delicate, and dolled up in a red kimono, Shenandoah stepped between the doors. Cat-slit, yolk-yellow eyes, cradled in slight epicanthic folds, swept the room. Waist-length blue-black hair with the body of well-oiled straw was pulled into some sort of elaborate confection atop her well-modeled head. The scar on my wrist gave such a burst of burning pain, my fingers almost clenched.
Great. Just great.
Her aura was the deep, sonorous bruising of a full hellbreed, the taint of hell, warping the strings of the physical world, plucking, like little flabby fingers, the harp strings of this place of flesh. I pointed the gun, let it settle naturally so the bullet would follow its own path of consequence right between her eyes. Decided that the best defense, so to speak, would be a good offense.
Hey, it's my usual method.
All right, bitch. Irene, the waitress. Bring her out. And maybe I won't burn this whole pile of bad taste to the ground.
Shen placed her small hands together and bowed from the waist, a slight inclination of her upper body.
Kismet, you honor our humble business with your presence.
Can a so-solid routine, Shen. Bring out the fucking waitress, or I start wasting paying customers and staff. Your call.
What is the nature of her sin, avenging one?
You just let me worry about that, Hellspawn. Hand her over for questioning. And while you're at it, sit down and prepare to answer a few questions yourself.
Shen's smile broadened. Her teeth were white bone behind bleeding lips, and her cheeks plumped up adorably. The kimono swished slightly as she settled, maybe on her heels, maybe not. I didn't know what was under the long skirt she habitually wore, and experience has taught me not to even guess.
I do not think you understand the situation, Hunter.
Oh, you did not just start this game with me.
Black strings of hair fell in Shenandoah's face. I'd shot whatever architecture underpinned her elaborate coiffure, a trick no less amazing because it was only half intentional. It had occurred to me at the very last moment that maybe just killing her would be a tactical error in here.
But oh, it would be so satisfying.
Bring her forward!
I tensed, but a blood-haired female... The mop was really amazing. Crimson hair to her nipped-in waist, a sequined maroon sheath just like Mae West's, hugging dead white curves.
Hey!
Was pushed forward out of the crowd. She had a pale, hard little face, with a rotten bloom of hellish beauty on it like scurf powder on blood. And her eyes were dark and liquid under that flat shine of a traitor.
This is the one you seek, Kismet.
Great! Now I have to figure out how to get us all out of here.
Now we're all going to be civilized, aren't we? I'm taking the waitress and my friend here with me.
Anybody have any problems with that?
Shen made another quick movement, her dainty hands fluttering. I almost pulled the trigger, but no. The assembled damned pulled away, pressing back as if I had the plague, leaving a nice, clear corridor between the mistress of the cat club and yours truly.
Wonderful, Jill! This is gonna hurt.
You and your master will pay for this.
My master? Mikhail's dead.
My teacher's in Valhalla.
If Shen thought mentioning Misha would yank my chain enough to get me to make a mistake, she was either stupid or holding something in reserve.
And whatever else Shenandoah is, she's not stupid.
You can't touch him, bitch.
His is not the hand that holds your leash, Hunter.
Shen's razor-pearl teeth showed in a snarl, all the more chilling because of the full-cheeked sweetness of her face. The kimono skirt rustled, shapes bulging underneath it.
Tell the master of the Monde he will pay for this.
Perry? Oh, good God, please.
If you think I'm here for him, you're wrong. Perry has no hold on me,
other than the fact that I'd rather deal with him than you any day of the week, since he has a vested interest in keeping me alive so he can fuck with me.
I hopped down from the table, the gun tracking smoothly. The waitress flinched, cowering. I eyed her.
Pick him up, traitor.
You will not!
This is one of mine, Hellspawn. You don't get to eat him tonight.
There are 6 pounds of center trigger pull on a Glock, and I was at about 4.5. The world had turned into a collection of edges too sharp to be real. All my senses working overtime and amped up into the red. Shen's face contorted once, smoothed out, crumpled again. The bruise of her aura tightened like a fist. I watched, waiting. If Shen was more than normally upset at Perry, or needed to regain some face in front of her minions and clients, this would get ugly really quickly.
You are only one, Hunter, and we are legion.
That does not particularly bother me. I've killed more in a night than you have in this dining room, Shen.
You, traitor. I told you to pick him up.
The traitor flinched as if she'd been pinched and moved to obey. I kept both guns on Shen.
I might get out of this alive. All hail the poker-faced hunter and her ability to talk smack.
Shen took 2 long strides forward, the fabric of her kimono's lower half moving in odd ways, silk stretching.
You will not leave this place alive.
The hell-tainted on every side moved closer.
Oh, so that's the way we're gonna do this.
My free hand was suddenly full of Glock.
Outside, Irene. And gently. If he dies, you're fucking next.
Irene began to move towards the door, Karp's form cradled in her stick-thin, dead-white arms, her purple satin gloves now stained with blood. This I took in through my peripheral vision, my heart rate cool and steady, both guns still locked on the mistress of the cat club.
Is that the way you want to play it, Shen?
Nothing human lived under the skirt of that antique kimono. The scar prickled, a mass of hot needles burrowing into my wrist, and clarity settled over each edge and curve of the room.
Take them!
Not one of the assembled breed or traders moved. Apparently, right at this moment, even fear of Shenandoah couldn't make them swarm me.
Sort of an indirect compliment.
I showed my teeth. My entire body relaxed into the flow of the moment, the absolute chilling certainty of violence taking all indecision out of the equation. Bring it. My forearms tensed, cords of muscle standing out as I edged toward that last pound and a half of pressure on the triggers.
Jesus fucking Christ! What do we have here?
I almost twitched. Relief threatened to unloose my knees, and the situation tipped from, oh my God, I'm not going to survive this, to, thank God, someone else is going to die with me.
Leon Budge, nice to see you.
Shen's head turned, a slow movement like a servo motor with oiled bearings. I kept both guns trained on her. I'd once seen her unzip a traitor's guts and lift a double handful of wet intestine to her plump little candy apple red mouth. Things like that will make a hunter cautious. Add to that the fact that I'd wanted to question the traitor about a certain stable of high-priced underage sex slaves, and Shen's calm, inscrutable smile as strings of human gut hung from her mouth, and you had bad blood between us. I knew she'd been in it up to her eyeballs, but I hadn't been able to make any of it stick. I couldn't prove it to my own satisfaction. I could prove little of what I suspected when it came to her, which meant I couldn't kill her with a clear conscience. Or even just a reasonably clear conscience, which some days is all you're going to get in this line of work.
You got crappy taste in restaurants, darling. Why don't we go somewhere civilized where I can get me a goddamn drink?
Shen suddenly surged forward.
Oh, now, sweetie pie, don't do that. Me and Rosita here, we gets nervous when a slope-eyed gal like you gets all twitchy.
Jesus, Leon, how much of a racist cliche can you be?
I began to advance, taking a quick glance to make certain I was out of Leon's field of fire. He stood in a battered leather trench coat, plain dun instead of black, his hair a crow's nest of untidy brown waves, copper charms threaded on black heavy-duty waxed thread, and clinking slightly as a breeze ruffled his hair. The wreck of the swinging doors framed him, and he held the rifle like it wasn't capable of blowing a breed in half with the modifications he'd put on it. Chubby cherub's face, wide shoulders, a body kept in shape by a hunter's constant training, but still managing to give the impression of pudginess. Leon looked like a newscaster trapped in goth boy drag, an impression helped along by the eyeliner scoring rings around each hazel eye and the mass of amulets around his neck on cords, thongs, and thin copper chains. Four plain silver rings on his left hand ran with blue sparks. One of them was the apprentice ring his teacher had given him. Leon was smiling under a scruff of dark stubble, white teeth peeping out.
Should I put her down, Kiss?
Don't call me that, damn it.
If she moves.
Or hell, even if you don't like her hairstyle.
Well, the barber was an amateur.
The bandoliers crossing his chest held small silver-coated throwing knives, each one sharp enough to take a finger off.
You have earned my hatred. Hell and earth both witness my vow, Hunter. You will pay for this.
Yeah, one way or another, sure.
You already said that, most honorable Shenandoah. Don't be boring. I would have pantomimed a yawn if my hands weren't quivering with the urge to take the guns out again, turn around, and put this murderous hellspawn down like the parasite she was. Leon's gaze flicked to mine for a fraction of a second. It was a purely professional look, gauging what I was likely to do next. I looked cool and calm to the untrained eye, but something in my cheek twitched like a needle was plucking at the flesh. The glance was also a communication, one I heard as clearly as verbal speech.
Are you gonna throw down, darling?
If I did, he was willing to back me. But Leon knew just as surely as I did it would be a terrible mistake. These Hellbreed intruders weren't surprised anymore, and they'd had plenty of time to think about how to take the two of us apart. Shen could threaten all she wanted now, and still retain some semblance of face. But if we killed her, it wouldn't be a free-for-all that would allow us to divvy them up and pick them off. No, if we insulted her, then killed her, whoever wanted to step into her shoes would have to kill us to prove they were worthy of taking Shen's place.
Well, Jill, you fucked this up six ways to Sunday.
Cool night air poured down the hall, touching Leon's hair. He backed up, covering me with the rifle as I retreated from what had certainly been a bad idea in the first place. The hat check girl was nowhere in sight as we moved through the hall, past the crumpled bodies of the bouncers. I was suddenly struck by an entirely new feeling, as I was used to the sound of sirens being a relief, as if the cavalry's on its way. Now I felt the way any criminal feels, like the sirens were baying hounds, and I was the fox. Fucking hell. The blood-haired traitor was gone, and so is Carp. Leon drove, of all things, a big blue Chevy half-ton. The interior smelled of grease and jostled as the engine labored.
This thing needs a tune-up.
I'll look into that. Where the fuck's your car, darling?
Blew up.
Bummer.
What the hell are you doing here, Leon? And not that I'm not happy to see you.
I'm here because you called. And because someone's been trapping Scurf in my neck of the woods. I wouldn't mind since we got enough to spare, but trapping them means they have something planned, and that I don't like. I tracked them over the city limits. We got ourselves a genuine grade A problem going on here.
What do you mean, trapping Scurf?
I clung to the oh shit strap while he took a corner, working the gears like they were going out of style. Beer cans rolled around my ankles, and a metal footlocker containing ammo and various other odds and ends rattled, sliding forward to smack my boots. Then Leon did something I hated. He closed his eyes.
Oh, shit.
I came back from hell with a gift or a curse, depending on which way you look at it. My blue eye can see between and below the surface of the world. It is that ability to go between that sets me apart from other hunters. That and my bargain with Perry. Most of us just come back from hell with some interesting instincts, a grasp of sorcery, and the ability to see through the masks Hellbreed like to wear. But some of us return with more. Leon came back a tracker. You name it, he can follow it. All it requires, he says, is the right mindset, and a healthy amount of Pabst Blue Ribbon to dull his sensitivity the rest of the time. If Budge wasn't half drunk, things were very bad indeed. The only good thing about it was, he needed a bathroom about as often as a female hunter does.
Beer does that to you when you've got a human metabolism. Me? I can't drink enough of the damn stuff to even get a buzz.
I didn't ask who we were following. Leon had seen Carp, unmistakably human and bleeding in the middle of a hellbreed haunt, and had further seen me unwilling to leave without him. Some things are just understood.
Leon!
I hung on for dear life as he slammed us through traffic, missing a semi by bare inches and almost dinging the paint job on a showroom bright black SUV. Leon's eyelids flickered like he was dreaming.
What do you mean, trapping Scurf? This is bad, bad news on all fronts.
I mean catching little bastards and shipping them out of town, both by rail and water. I didn't think it was possible. Who the hell would want them, huh? Hang on.
Hang on?
Leon twisted the wheel, hard. We cut across two lanes of traffic. He floored it, and I started to feel a little green. It wasn't the speed. It was the fact that he had his eyes shut tight.
Even when you're used to Leon, it's creepy. You might want to slow down. I'm having some problems up here.
Yeah, what kind of problems?
Where do I start? There's a case. Some dirty cops. They've already tried to kill me.
Holy shit!
His eyes snapped open, but it wasn't comforting at all. His dark gaze was filmed as if by cataracts, shapes like wind-blown clouds rolling over the eyeballs. For some reason, nobody ever says a goddamn thing about the way Leon drives. He closed his eyes again, stamping on the accelerator, and I was seriously considering commending my soul to God yet again. He jagged over, zipping into an alley, neat as you please, and punched the brakes. Leon bailed out like his pants were on fire. I followed, sliding across the seat and hopping out his side. He'd taken the keys with him, so I swept the door closed. He was only capable of human speed, but human speed is pretty damn fast when you're a hunter. Across the alley, Leon dashed up a lowered fire escape. I stayed in hot pursuit. He zigzagged across a low rooftop and came to an abrupt halt, staring across the street. I gave the street a once-over and looked up at the granite Jesus glowering at downtown.
Holy shit. She brought him to the hospital?
Huh. Well, that's one almighty big statue there.
Leon blinked a couple times, his shoulders coming down and the colorless fume of urgency swirling away from him.
That's Sisters of Mercy. Used to be Catholic. I thought you were in there once, with Mickey Hill and you. Well, let's go on in then. I need that traitor. And I need that cop, too.
He's a cop? I thought you said he was trying to kill you.
He's one of mine, Leon. Now move your ass! Oh, it's good to see you.
And it was, too. Some things only another hunter will understand. And moreover, sometimes you don't want to be questioned. It didn't matter to Leon what the hell was going on. If I was in it, he was going to be in it, too. Up to the eyeballs, if necessary. And without counting the cost or thinking twice about it.
And while we're at it, we'll find out who's shipping Scarf around, for God's sake.
I hopped up to the ledge.
Wait!
Leon's fingers curled around my arm. Only another hunter, or Saul, would be able to do that without me instinctively twitching away.
Jill.
What?
You doing all right, darling?
The street below looked quiet. I took a second look to make sure. It swam with light as if underwater, wavering, and snapped into focus when I made an almost physical effort to clean up my mental floor. The truth burned my tongue, but you can't lie to another hunter. You just can't.
No, I'm not.
Well, shit.
I heartily concur. Now come on.
I leapt out into space, pulling etheric force through the scar. I slammed down on the pavement, smoke flashing in the air as the sudden violation of a law of physics rippled around me.
Jesus, Jill. What would have happened if the scar failed? You'd be lying on the pavement bleeding now. Then again, Jill, don't borrow trouble.
I stalked for the entrance to the ER. Leon would find his own way down,